and welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network. A lot to talk to you today, this Thursday in January, and I've got David Teal from the Virginia Pilot joining me here. And David, I had a whole rundown ready to go and just some late breaking news coming in. So let's start with that. Carla Williams signing a 5-year extension to remain the athletic director of Virginia. Just kind of what have you heard from obviously the Freedom of Information Act and what y'all been able to find out there?
Well, Preston, I've been requesting this document literally for months, and each time was told there is no such document at this point. And because the Board of Visitors had reelected her, and that's their term, to the position back in June. And so I just thought it was natural. Okay, let's see what the new terms are. And not until last night did it hit my inbox. Now, I was told ahead of time that it was probably going to come this week. But it's a new 5-year deal, goes through May of 2030, bumps her guaranteed compensation up to $1.4 million, which is a 29% pay hike. And she's also eligible for a $300,000 annual performance bonus, plus two other bonuses that are connected to Virginia making a bowl, any bowl, and the Cavaliers finishing in the top 10 of the Director's Cup all sports standings. Those two bonuses would be about $40,000 each. And given that UVA has finished top five each of the last 2 years in the Director's Cup, I would think that the top 10, while not guaranteed, is a pretty good bet.
Yeah, and you know, so that takes into account all the other sports for the most part. Looking at just kind of it's been kind of months, and it's kind of been a weird process. And obviously, I think Virginia fans know by now, Carla Williams doesn't talk a lot in the media. Very rarely, if any. I was trying to remember with some people the last time that we've actually had like an open kind of press conference situation with her outside of, a new building coming up or, any groundbreakings or anything like that. It's very rare. So given that, and your experience just kind of covering college athletics, how unique was this situation?
Very. Carla, to her credit, she readily admits that she doesn't like to be out there in the media and in the spotlight. That is just her preference. It is not my preference.
No.
and I have expressed that to her and to others at UVA to no avail. I just think it's a more public job than she has made it to be. The interesting thing, she just completed her first year on the CFP selection committee. I mean, she's very involved nationally. I'm told that in ACC meetings that are not only just the ADs, but in larger groups, that she's very engaged and very open and opinionated and bright. And I'm like, share that with us, please. But not yet.
Yeah, and I know I'm speaking to some people around athletics. There's internal people trying to get her to speak more out there, because we've always heard it from people in athletics and other people in media that have talked to her. She's very well respected, around the country. It just the fan base, I don't think they really know Carla Williams all that well. But at any point, I know there's been a lot of speculation. Did it seem like there was going to be a time when UVA was going to have to move on from Carla Williams?
I don't know if it ever got to that point. There's a lot of speculation. And I think, this 7-month gap created that. And there were other AD, there are other Power Four AD openings out there. Did Carla Williams pursue any of those aggressively? I don't know for sure. The one where I thought that she might be a candidate was South Carolina for two reasons. Number one, it's the SEC, which is where her roots are. She's a Georgia graduate and worked there and coached there. And number two, because of her very good relationship with Dawn Staley. And I thought, if Dawn has a say in this, then perhaps Carla could be a very viable candidate. But it did not happen. South Carolina went in another direction.
Where does this kind of leave Virginia Athletics now? Obviously, some big decisions coming up with basketball, which we're going to talk about in just a little bit. But where does this kind of leave Virginia Athletics? Just now you have the consistency and leadership, and kind of things where they progress now.
Yeah, well, big decisions indeed, Preston. I think the decision on what to do with basketball is going to be made for her in terms of just the results on the floor, not by a higher power. I think it's pretty clear that the Cavaliers will be in coach search mode in March if they aren't already. That's just how these things work. And then football. And Tony Elliott and what becomes of that program. I think clearly he has to show market progress next season, or the pressure is going to be such that there's going to have to be a change. And thus far, Carla's track record is mixed when it comes to coaching hires.
Yeah, it's been a mixed bag. Obviously, her first one, Tina Thompson, that one was a colossal fail for Tina. And then, Coach Mox has done well in the recruiting trail, hasn't really shown on their court yet.
Has
Um,
not.
her her hire in football, obviously Tony Elliott, the results haven't been there yet. All some optimism maybe this offseason with how they've done in the transfer portal, but again, it's got to show on the field. And then obviously basketball, that has something she has not had to do yet. So we'll see when we get there. But yeah, I guess it is a kind of a crucial period. And I guess does it help having consistency and leadership when, because that was the kind of the thing hanging over all this. Well, if you got to replace your AD, then where does that put you in the basketball search? Then going into next football season, it does it help at all?
Well, that's why this needed to get done, because surely they couldn't have gone into basketball search mode with speculation hovering over the AD, or it would be suboptimal to do so. Because if you're a candidate, you'd sure like to know who your boss is going to be. Now, I've seen schools search with interim ADs, interim presidents, and such, and they've gotten good candidates. And Virginia basketball is such an attractive job that I think that the candidate pool would be deep regardless. But I think having that knowledge of who your boss is going to be will enhance the pool further.
Well, after months of speculation, it is nice to have an answer, and we'll kind of see how the next couple of months play out. But back to our regular scheduled programming, you were at SMU and UVA last night for at John Paul Jones Arena. Almost looked like Ron Sanchez was going to pick up a nice win until the last 30 seconds of the game. Boopie Miller hits a three, just about at the buzzer, 0.4 seconds away from the buzzer, as SMU wins 54-52, dropping Virginia to 8-9 overall, a losing record for the first time this late in the season since 2011. Just overall thoughts from what you saw last night in what looked like a little bit more like Virginia basketball, a low scoring game, slower pace, but in the end, just couldn't get it done.
Preston, it was Virginia's best defensive effort against a power conference opponent on the points per possession metric since last February against Wake Forest. I mean, they were really, I mean, SMU's the highest scoring team in the
Yeah.
league, averaging 84 points. Virginia held the highest scoring team in the ACC to 30 points below its average. And Ron Sanchez, after the game, called that the Virginia way. Last night, the Virginia way wasn't good enough. And I think that in of itself is a little alarming and kind of, endemic of the entire season. And it just seems that no matter what they do, it's not good enough. And the Mustangs last night were 2 of 18 from three for the first 39 and a half minutes of the game. They were 3 for 3 from deep in the last 25 seconds.
And
And
good
that
looks
is
too.
just a gutting way to lose. And the question now becomes how gutting and how do they move forward? Because they are walking into a hornet's nest on Saturday at Louisville. Because Pat Kelsey has that group really humming.
Which Virginia knows full well after playing them just 2 weeks ago now. Looking at before we get too big picture, SMU mentioned 3 for 3 down the stretch for in the last 30 seconds from three. They outscored UVA 9-2 in those last 30 seconds. And one of the more questionable moves, and it could be a little retroactive looking back at it, is subbing Ishan Sharma, who hit the four free throws, also hit a big three before that for Tane Murray. And Ron Sanchez said that was mainly a defensive decision. What do you make of that move? And it's pretty 20 hindsight's pretty 2020, but what do you make of it looking back?
Preston, when I saw Sharma being subbed out, I was like, But then I looked at Tane Murray's free throw stats this season. Small sample size, but he was 2 for 2 on the night, which brought him to 11 of 13 on the season. That's like 85%. That's pretty good. And he's clearly a better defender than is Sharma. So I got no problem with it.
Yeah. I always just go back because he hadn't played in, I think it was about 10 minutes, he hadn't played in the game. And I
Fair.
always go back to that because I think back the Lakers used to have a guy named Saša Vujačić come off the bench, and they would only bring him off the bench at the very end of games to shoot free throws because he was like a 95% free throw shooter. But they did it one time and he missed both of them because he hadn't played in the entire game up to that. And so I've always kind of leaned more towards keeping the guy that's out there and in motion and is kind of in the flow of the game. But, veterans kind of rule the day in late game situations like that.
Yeah, they do. And you're talking about a senior as opposed to a freshman. And Sharma had never been in a situation like that. And your point's a very fair one because the two free throws that Murray had made on the night were in the first half.
Looking at another kind of standout stat line, was Isaac McNealy, 0 for 6 from 3, 1 for 9 overall, 4 points. It snapped a 33 straight game streak that he had with at least one made three-pointer. That goes all the way back to last year in a game that they beat Virginia Tech in. And I think he had 2 games in a row, Wake Forest and Virginia Tech. He was 0 for 2 in both those games. Just it looked like a lot of good looks for McNealy last night. And I know some people asked about after the game because it's kind of been a theme. Are you getting good enough looks for him? Didn't see that as a problem last night. I think he just kind of was tired or just didn't have the legs to get some of these shots going.
Preston, not only did he missed badly.
2 air balls, yeah.
Yes. I was like, huh? Like, did somebody tip that? And then I'm like, no, they didn't. And number one, that was striking. And then number two, for IMAC and Andrew Rohde to have identical stat lines
Yes,
of
exactly the
one of
same.
nine, 0 for 6. And still, they almost, that's their number one and number three score with Elijah Saunders in the middle at number two. But your number one and number three scorers have those stat lines, and you still almost win the game.
Yeah,
Maybe should have won the game.
and a lot of that's because of Blake Buchanan and the sudden reemergence. I don't want to say a full reemergence, but just kind of he came out there, and one of the big things that people have wanted to see from him ever since his freshman year is just energy, getting rebounds, blocking shots, just being all over the court, and that's what he finally looked like last night.
just being big, right? Which he is, use your God-given size and skills to the benefit of the team. And it was interesting that for the first 30 minutes last night, Virginia did not have an offensive rebound. None. But then he got three, and there were two others. They got five offensive boards in the last 10 minutes. And I think they only led to 4 second chance points, but they extended possessions. I mean, they loomed large there until it became Boopie Miller time.
There was one with a few minutes left that it was just a pure effort, but also confidence play from Blake Buchanan. Because I think rebounding is also a lot of confidence too, because you got to believe that you can go up and get the ball, especially when you're facing a 7'2" Turkish big man down there in Yigitolu, who Virginia had a lot of trouble with in the first matchup, and at times in last night as well. But a good game for Blake Buchanan, and you just kind of is he gonna kind of keep going with this, because we saw him last year at Florida, or in that game against Florida, have a really good game, and you're like, all right, well, maybe they got something this freshman. It just kind of never materialized and carried over the rest of the season. He started going big picture, but I want to do that a little bit more going forward and just kind of answer the question, how did we get here with Virginia basketball? We're going to do that coming up on the Who's On podcast. Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. My guest is David Teal from the Virginia Pilot. You can read his stuff over there, including a story from last night and also the Carla Williams news just coming out before we recorded here. We're talking about Virginia basketball, and I mentioned earlier this is the first time UVA has had a losing record this late into a season since 2011. They're 8-9 right now, and it just kind of begs the question. And it's been hard in recent weeks to kind of think of, well, what do you talk about with this Virginia team, especially after that California road trip that kind of really sunk any false hope that you had of getting maybe to an NCAA tournament bid? How did we get here with Virginia basketball? I'll kind of leave it open and just kind of hear your thoughts.
Well, first of all, the question now is, are they going to get to the ACC tournament?
Yes.
As crazy as that sounds, literally the dominant team of the ACC regular season for the last decade, the notion that it wouldn't be among the 15 teams of the group of 18 that qualify for Charlotte is just really mind-bending. But that's where we are. They only have the one conference win against the team, in NC State that is on the struggle bus in a large way as well. But Preston, it all goes back to Tony Bennett. I mean, it just does. Is this roster as composed a Sweet 16 Final Four roster? No. Would it have been with Tony Bennett? No. Would they have been better with Jalen Worley at the point and with Tony Bennett on the sideline? Hell yes. And that's no knock on Ron Sanchez. I think he would tell you that because Tony Bennett is an accomplished head coach. Ron Sanchez is not. And the Cavaliers right now are suffering the consequences. And oh, by the way, let's also remember, Bill Courtney in Miami is going through the same thing as an interim. It doesn't mean that the interim is inept. It means that the interim has been put in a situation where everybody is at sixes and sevens. The players are caught off guard. The staff is caught off guard. And especially when at Miami, you're in the middle of the season. At Virginia, you were just a couple of weeks before the season. This didn't happen in June or March. This happened in mid-October. And we can debate the timing of Tony's decision, forever. But it was non-traditional, to be sure, and it certainly didn't help matters.
I've gone back and forth, but I on the Jalen Worley question, I think it makes a little bit of a difference having him there still, but I don't know if it's a big enough difference to say that they're kind of more in the upper echelon of the ACC like they have been in the past. The Tony Bennett question, that's an interesting one just because we've seen him get more out of less with these rosters over the years. But overall, the program's kind of, they're on this just complete upward trajectory for the first part of his tenure and peak, obviously, in 2019. But ever since then, because of COVID and other things just kind of happening in the sport, it's kind of taken a step down, it seems like, every year. I don't know if you feel the same.
Well, I don't think it necessarily has taken a step down in the regular season,
Yeah.
but this is a sport that is measured by how you do in March. And the Cavaliers have not performed in March. And to think, if Tony Bennett never coaches again, think about his last, not one, not his last game, his last two games. Because he and his staff screwed up the NC State game
Absolutely.
in DC in the ACC tournament. Absolutely butchered the end game. That was coaching 101, and it was malpractice there at the end. And then, the Colorado State debacle. Those are as two as ugly a losses as you'll find, and to think that would be his last two is just so counterintuitive for such a distinguished man and such a distinguished career. But yeah, I mean, I think the talent level on the roster, for all of Tony's abilities to get more from less and to remain among the top two and sometimes the top dog in the ACC during the regular season, which in many regards is a greater accomplishment than winning a 3-day clam bake in wherever the tournament is that year, the ACC tournament is that
Yeah.
year. And he knew it. I mean, he knew that he didn't have the horses. And that's why he hit the portal in the off season, and he got multi-year transfers, talked about a 2-year plan. So I think he even anticipated some growing pains this season, but certainly nothing like this.
Yeah, I don't think he. A lot of people are like, oh, he saw the writing on the wall and that's why he got out. I don't think that at all. I think, I think a lot of us thought on paper this roster looked better than one of the worst teams in the ACC at this point in the season. The point guard issue, that's a whole other thing. And I think some other things that have contributed to that, obviously Jalen Worley leaving, the whole Christian Bliss saga playing out behind the scenes. Is he going to play? Is he not going to play? Is he healthy? Is he not healthy?
So
So there's a.
peculiar.
There's been a lot going on outside of just the roster itself, but there is a lot of overlap. And also, when you go out and you think you get a former five-star recruit coming out of high school and TJ Power, and you think he's going to add something to the program, and he did not play last night.
Nope.
There's a lot of misses in the transfer portal, and it's kind of where college basketball is right now. If you miss in the portal, then I mean, even look at John Calipari at Arkansas right now. He's missed on a couple guys in the portal and it's put them back.
Oh yeah, and sometimes, Preston, it's not even missing in the portal. And I think some people, and rightfully so, believe that Virginia is behind many of its peers when it comes to athlete compensation. I refuse to call it NIL because it's not that.
It's not.
But guess what? Money doesn't guarantee everything, because look at Miami.
Yeah.
Miami's got money for football and basketball, and they're a train wreck. And so much so that Jim Larranega tapped out. So, it's such a fine line, and it's not the same sport, but it does demonstrate how difficult it can be in the transfer portal era. Look at Florida State football. It is the poster child for the yin and the yang, from 13-0 to 2-10 in 1 year.
With
Just
rosters largely made
remarkable.
of transfers.
Yes. And with them, it wasn't all, but they missed on the quarterback. They missed on DJU.
Yeah. You look at the, I guess, do you think for there was any kind of, I mean, so much has changed since 2019, so it's really hard to compare the sport then versus the sport now. Like
Yes.
you kind of had the COVID bridge in the middle to this whole world of NIL and athlete compensation, the transfer portal and all that. It was there, did Virginia fail to, I guess, build off the national championship, or is it just there, it's a different world of college basketball now, and so it's not going to be the same, and it may not translate what you were doing before to now.
Certainly not in recruiting. How you were recruiting then, how you recruited Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome and DeAndre Hunter. Oh, we're going to bring DeAndre Hunter in and redshirt him.
Yeah.
Can you imagine such an approach? No. That's not gonna fly. So yeah, it is. It's a completely different game. And you mentioned COVID. How many games in a row had Virginia won heading into that ACC tournament that was canceled? I know they weren't the regular season champion, Florida State was, but man, they were playing really well. And then in 21, that whole bizarre COVID season, again, they're regular season champions of the league. And then COVID hits them in Greensboro, and you'll never convince me that a full-strength Virginia team would not have beaten Ohio in the NCAA tournament and perhaps gone on to another Sweet 16 or Elite Eight.
Yeah. The 1920 season's one of my biggest what ifs in
Sure.
Virginia basketball history because, obviously it was a slow start. The offense was kind of sputtering at times, but that's one of the best defensive teams Tony Bennett had put on the court, and they've really figured it out towards the end. And I was like, they may not make a long run, but they certainly had Sweet 16 potential. And if you can kind of build off, like, you lose all the talent from the 2019 national champions, but you build off that and you make another good run, and that just kind of keeps the forward momentum going in the program. And then the next year to have what you're talking about with the COVID case happening in the ACC tournament, an ACC tournament that I quite frankly thought they might go on and win. With the way the field was setting up, because they're playing Georgia Tech next, who went on to win the ACC tournament.
Exactly.
It's there. There's a lot of what ifs, and I look back to those two points a lot when I think about where Virginia is now. Because if they could have just kept that forward progress going, who knows what the situation would be these days?
Yeah, was it against Syracuse when Reese Beekman hit the three
Yes. Yep.
down in Greensboro at the ACC tournament? And that's when, like you, I started thinking, they might win this thing. And then they got shut down.
That was one of the more unique and fun ACC or Virginia teams to watch because they weren't a great defensive team, but they had Sam Hauser, Trey Murphy, Jay Huff, just letting it fly from deep. It was a fun, like, team, and it was disappointing that fans couldn't be in the arena that year because that was a fun team to watch.
They had some bucket-getting dudes.
Yeah, more so than other years in Virginia basketball. You talked about it earlier, but what kind of job is this Virginia one going forward? And obviously, Ron Sanchez has the rest of the season, but kind of looking at it now, what kind of job does Virginia in the greater college basketball landscape, especially with where the ACC is now? I talked to Brendan Marks a couple of weeks ago from The Athletic on this podcast, and kind of like, why is the ACC where it is now? I know you have kind of talked about that as well, but where's Virginia kind of in this job market?
I think it will be a very attractive job. And look, do ACC programs have the same bankrolls as their SEC counterparts? No. But last year the challenge was 7-7, the SEC ACC challenge. And then this year, all of a sudden, it's 2-14. I don't think the ACC long term is that far behind the SEC, especially Preston, with the House settlement, because now everybody's going to have, if they so choose, and Virginia will be among those that choose to do this, to share up to $20.5 million annually with their athletes. Now, will there be outside compensation packages, perhaps real NIL? Yes, but in theory, those will be regulated and monitored by Deloitte through a clearinghouse to assure fair market value. Might somebody legally challenge that? History tells us, of course,
Yes.
they will. But I think there's going to be some, not a complete, but some leveling of the playing field on the compensation front. Given that, and Virginia's basketball heritage, and the fact that, no offense to, Carla wanting to turn around football, it's a basketball school. It just is. Not to the level of Duke and Carolina, but when you look at what the program has accomplished, and not just in the Terry Holland past, we're talking about the recent past. I think all of that will combine, and its location, fertile recruiting. You can recruit nationally to the University of Virginia. It will be a very attractive job.
I mean, is it more of a job where, I guess, is it kind of depends what you're looking for next, where you're looking for someone that's proven at the Power Four level, or are you looking at like taking a big swing, or are you looking at, some of the up and coming guys in the sport, I guess?
I think both.
Yeah.
And I long ago learned never to be in the business of suggesting to someone whom they should hire, but more along the lines of whom you should consider. Because what really has to inform your opinion is the interviews, when you meet with people and when you vet them. That's when you have to rely as an athletic director and whoever else is advising you on your instincts. I mean, that's what informed Craig Littlepage and John Oliver when they went and got Tony Bennett. And who among us saw that coming? Not me. He was never in any of my speculative candidate stories. And he turned out to be a brilliant choice. So you just never know on the, and no one saw Bronco Mendenhall coming. And if Bronco perhaps had been a little more patient, and if COVID hadn't intervened, who knows where that might have led. I happen to think it might have led to some pretty good places for UVA football.
Yeah.
So it will be a fascinating search. Will Carly use a firm? My hunch is yes. Might it be Collegiate Sports Associates, of for whom Craig Littlepage works now as a consultant? I don't know. Maybe that decision's already been made. Maybe I need to FOIA some of those things. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting march in Charlottesville.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of talk already. I get a candidate list sent to me every day by someone. Just, look at these names, and I'm like, it's the same names they're putting on every list. Like, stop reading every list. It's the same people. Just give it some time. Real quick, UVA announced that on February 8th, Tony Bennett's going to be honored during the Georgia Tech game, celebrated throughout the game. They're going to do a banner raising at halftime. What do you make of the timing? I made a point to someone like, you gotta do something with this season, try to get some kind of excitement, try to sell tickets. What do you make of the timing?
It is so curious, and I am beyond fascinated. Preston, I had no intention of attending the UVA Georgia Tech game. I am now.
Yes.
Does Tony speak? to the crowd? Will he speak to the media? My guess is no. What will the reception be like? So many questions. I had more than one person, excuse me, say when they saw that news, are they not reading the room very well in Charlottesville? Because, let's face it, the vibe around the program is decidedly negative. And as Tony Bennett himself certainly understands, a lot of that is rooted in his departure.
Yeah.
So, does Tony Bennett deserve to be recognized? Oh my gosh, in every way possible. And eventually, I think they will put his name smack dab on that court at JPJ. Does it need to be? I don't know. S smarter public relations minds than mine will have to figure, or already have apparently figured
Yeah.
that out.
I do struggle with the timing. I understand kind of what they're trying to go with because it has not been a good season and you're trying to just keep some excitement around the program and maybe just have a day out there. But there's six games between now and when they play that Georgia Tech game. Who knows where this program is at that point? It could be a lot worse. It could be marginally better.
Sure.
You don't know what it's going to be like when you get to February 8th. But yeah, like you said, it's pretty toxic around the program. Every time I look at comments after games, yes, they're talking about the games themselves and Ron Sanchez, but you know, one of the first comments I see is talking about Tony Bennett and the timing of his departure every single game, every single loss. And we talked about it before. You could debate that till the end. And it kind of brought up a question, should Tony Bennett's legacy be impacted at all by how he exited?
Oh, it's part of it. Should it be tainted? No. Is it
Yeah.
part of it? Yes. Is it a shining moment for Tony Bennett? No.
Yeah, and I don't it's so hard because he did. I mean, this program isn't anywhere near where it is. They don't win a national championship, obviously, with all he's done. And I don't dock him that many points for the departure. I heard his reasoning. I understand his reasoning. I have every reason to believe that that is his exact reasoning. So you miss me on all the speculation about, how the roster was or the, players asking for more NIL money at the last minute or whatever it may be. Yeah, I still believe kind of his reasoning behind it. And it is interesting just kind of the timing of all this. And that February 8th game is going to be very interesting to see kind of what the reception is because they had a whiteout against SMU, but there's a lot of blue seats.
Yeah, and I think that as they looked at the upcoming schedule, Georgia Tech seemed like they notice they didn't do it for the Duke game. Let's just put it that way.
Well, they know they could sell tickets for that, or even the Virginia Tech game. And let me make this point real quick because I've been making it to some other people. I think Virginia Tech's roster this year is one of the least talented in the ACC. But what Mike Young has done just to have their head above water a little bit, like that's a sign of a good coach right there.
Well, they weren't above water until very recently.
The NC State comeback last night
Yes.
helped with that, and then getting the win against Cal last week, which made Virginia's loss to Cal look all the much worse. But I think I like Mike Young's ability and what he's able to do X's and O's wise just to
Oh,
get something out of the roster.
absolutely.
He's wringing the last drips out of the towel, but he's getting something out of it.
No doubt. And I didn't see last night's game because I was at JPJ, and for whatever reason, with a sparse crowd, the internet wasn't great, so I couldn't even watch the game on my laptop. I was kind of cursing the Wi-Fi gods, but I did watch a good bit of the Cal game. I mean, they're up 22 and they squandered the whole darn thing. But then had a little 8-0 run and righted the ship. And I think that's a credit to not only the players, but the man pulling the strings on the sideline.
Yeah. All right, Dave, I want to thank you so much for joining the Who's On podcast as always. Go remember to check out his work at the Virginian Pilot. Also, follow thesaber.com this year for all the latest on the Wahoos from basketball season, football, the transfer portal, and baseball season just around the corner. And Brian O'Connor's got a really good team over there, ranked number two in the first D1 baseball rankings of the season. We're going to have Jay Wolfolk on the podcast next week, one of the starting pitchers for the Wahoos. Follow, subscribe to the Who's On podcast on Apple and Spotify so you can hear those conversations like with Mr. Teal and Mr. Wolfolk coming up. Wherever you find your podcast, leave a five-star review if you like what you hear. David, thanks so much for joining, and we will see y'all next week on the Who's On podcast.